Welcome to the August 12th use case realization call. Today we're meeting with the modeling team and use case teams to discuss modeling impacts. So we're just getting started here. I'd ask Bill from AT&T to join because there was that one open point in the modeling subcommittee about the AT&T model template thing. So I had asked also Jacqueline to join, but yesterday we talked about it. I don't know if it's, was it sort of resolved or do we still need to discuss that?
No, it still needs to be discussed. So like okay. Where we left off yesterday was she was either going to join my weekly or this call.
I see.
She didn't join my weekly, so I just assumed she'd be joining this one.
Okay. I'll put this in the chat here so people can get to it. So if you go to this page and kind of scroll down, I've put together the use cases that have indicated they have modeling impact. And of course, this is also tracked on the, this is also tracked in the planning page. So usually I often do this earlier in the release, but this is a good time to, you know, we've already had some modeling discussion already. So this is a good time to hit this. So the 5G service modeling, we've got the VES event. We have I was going to say Andy had asked me to put links in here and I did put links here. So these should be, yeah, here we go. So these are actually linked now, Andy. So you can see that you can
awesome.
Go directly to them. I had created this table before. I cut and paste this table before. Let's see, the end-to-end network slicing has modeling impact and plug and play and licensing management and A1 adapter possibles. A1 adapter and
A1 adapter, I think, because they're actually exchanging policies across it.
Yeah.
And they're going to look into seeing if it's necessary to represent those. It is something that's actually being exchanged back and forth across the API and its external to ONAP, right? Because it's going from, I guess, SDNR, I'm guessing, down to the ORAN environment. Probably the... I guess it's the near real time RIC or whatever component handles that.
Okay.
But I'm not sure where that discussion got left off. But
yeah. Andre, can I ask which use case are you working on or are you most interested in? Andre, can you hear me? Okay, so so I guess let me see if, because I know Marge was very interested in,
and Jacqueline's here too.
Yeah, right. Here we go. All right. Okay, so maybe let's just, because Jacqueline's here, let's start with that. It's not exactly in this table of things, but it was definitely something that I had requested to say that we could talk about. And it was the ANEI model. What was it again? The back.
Reverse engineering.
Reverse engineering.
Thank
yeah.
you. Yes. Right. Okay. So, yeah. Take it away. Whatever you, if you have slides or a page or something. I think we started the discussion yesterday, but didn't quite finish, right?
Well, I'm not actually sure how much we want to discuss here. It might be just a question of making people aware, since a lot of time has passed since we discussed this last. Now I'm probably messing up the time scale, but at least some months ago, we had this ambition to use the ANAI database schema when we're trying to build up the information model, especially the resource information model. Basically, we want to eventually have some sort of alignment between the AI schema and the info model. And so the idea was sort of brought up about reverse engineering of being able to take the files that define the ANAI schema and actually generate papyrus models from that, so that we could then do some work with that. I don't think we ever landed the whole discussion of whether we would continuously import that schema, if we would take that sort of whenever ANAI would freeze a new version, that we would import it and then see what had changed, or if we would sort of use that more as an inspiration and take the UML model and then extract the parts that we actually want in the information model. So that discussion, I think we have to revive a little bit, what our intentions are, and how far we want to go with this. But right now we're still trying to get the last bugs sorted out to have a complete papyrus model generated out of the AI schema. That's been a bit of a struggle.
Okay, thanks. That's a pretty good summary, I think, of that activity. What do you need from the ANI team to help out?
Well, first of all, it's the sort of the basic stuff, you know, get the bugs out of the UML generation so that we can import that model properly. But I think we also need some support, because some of the structures within ANAI are probably just not that appropriate for the information model. I know there was a question around the so-called relationship list, which is very central to ANAI's implementation, but doesn't actually add value in terms of information. There are probably other things like that. So we will need to have some sort of reviewer at some point, once we actually have a good looking papyrus model, to tell us what parts are significant, what parts can we rationalize out of the information model.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Bill, do you have any questions for Jacqueline, or do you understand the need or the basic idea of what they're trying to do?
So is this generation done in ANAI's microservices today?
It was a spin-off of GraphGraph.
And so is it in GraphGraph? I'm not familiar with this. So, you know, I know that Jimmy had mentioned it and demoed it, you know, months back. But I mean, I can check with him, but I don't really know much on this. So,
there actually is a full recorded demo of GraphGraph, which might help. So in the, let me see.
Well, I mean, GraphGraph is, you know, the UI for exploring the model, but this papyrus generation thing is something different. I wasn't sure if that was like in the GraphGraph microservice or what.
Yeah, I think somehow they were able to take an extract, but I think the only so the code's somewhere. The question is, where did it end up, right? And maybe Jimmy would be a good person to ask that question. And I think, Jacqueline, you said there's just one deficiency, right? That the descriptors or description fields for the classes come through, but the description fields for the attributes or properties seem to be missing. So it seems like it's probably just pretty simple, right?
Yeah, I think that's the only thing that's left. But to be honest, the last time I got a version of the UML, there was a bug which actually meant that it couldn't even be parsed by papyrus at one point. And now I'm trying to remember. I think that was in the initial versions based on AAI schema version 19. Maybe I think now we're up to version 20. But there's another problem, which is that I just don't know where this UML model gets stored. I mean, does it get generated every time that the ANII schema is generated? Should we put this up somewhere on the list of artifacts? Because I know there is a page with the OXM file and the XMLs and various other things in the Swagger API. I think that's one of the things where we just have to decide, you know, does this also belong there? Is this generated in the same way? I'm not really sure about that. I never went into the details of how this file really came out because we were dealing with it as a trial to see how we could do this. So I don't actually know the practicalities around this.
Yeah, and I see this topic being discussed week after week after week after week with no progress in the modeling team. So clearly, you know, we need to maybe have a, you know, like a meeting like this to discuss specifically with Bill and or Jimmy.
That actually knows the development side of it. I think that's what basically, since the two other people besides Jimmy that were working on this, neither of them is active in the ONAP community anymore. Mm. So we do have to do a little bit of backtracking and see, you know, is there somebody that can take responsibility for this? I don't know if anybody has responsibility for GraphGraph either, to be honest.
Let me see who
gave So I know that was Pavel mainly, right? That was his, he basically created that. But yes, he has not been, associated with the ONAP community for a while. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Jimmy knows the development for GraphGraph. I mean, I'm in charge of GraphGraph now, but you know, I would need to know who's actually using it, right? Because there's a lot of stuff just in ANAI that we just continually deprecate because it is not being used. It was contributed, but use cases to use it. So if there's a solid use case that people are going to say, hey, we're going to use this and it's important, then, you know, maybe it bubbles up my priority list to try to figure out what it's about, right? So if that's what we're saying here, I mean, I can go take a look at it. I could talk to Jimmy. But, you know, right now we are spread thin. Like, we can't even, make our NFR things for Gwaylin, right? I have, six risks open or something like that.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, I think here it's more a question of we have to plan this in somewhere. I mean, my impression, I mean, GraphGraph is more a development tool, right? I mean, it's a visualizer for the ANAI schema. So it's actually not, it's not part of AAI proper. It's more like a development tool for ANAI. And this UML generation is also that. I mean, it's basically so that we in the ONAP community can get a better visualization of of what concepts ANAI supports. So in that sense, yeah, it's not as high a priority. I think here it's just a question of, we keep sort of wondering, is anything going to happen with it? So maybe it's not something that we can have in Gridlin, but maybe we just have to pin down, you know, does it come in Honolulu? Does it, do we need, does somebody need to throw some resources at it?
Yeah, because it's not going to get done without some,
I mean, currently it's not on our roadmap, like internally, to do this. But there has been some talk of being able to do this visualization and integrating GraphGraph into our Sparky UI. Maybe with that comes a little bit of help. But like I said, like it's, I can pose this on the weekly meeting to see if anyone wants to, is, if anyone, you know, can take this. If not, it would just be myself or Harish, the one other guy on my team.
So as I understand it, like, it sounds like the code is already there. We just need to understand kind of how to access it and use it, right?
And modify it to get the additional descriptors.
Okay. Okay. So what's the action item here? Maybe
I mean, it sounds like I should show up at an ANAI meeting, but maybe not.
Yeah.
I mean, Bill, what do you think? It sounds like right now is a bad time still. Or what do you think? Should we try to make a plan now?
I mean, if the issue is truly just there's like a small bug in it or something, maybe we just create a bug. See if someone could take it. You know, if I have time, I'll look into it. But is there like some kind of ongoing need to like enhance this, or
is it just a one-shot thing, or is it a continuous effort? Yeah.
Well, I think once it works, it should be pretty, you know, self-sustaining, right? I don't think we're going to ask for a ton of modifications. We may need to run it with each release just to get a modified model. But the main thing was to get the reverse engineered part of the AI schema into UML. And I think once we do that, we could probably maintain the model, but it'd be probably nice to run it on and just extract new portions of ANAI as they're added. But I think this is more of a, you know, a one-time thing initially, and we may need to do additional extracts without modifying the code that does that once we have it working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know there have been changes, and this is what happened with version 19 of the schema. There can be changes that actually break the existing code, and that's why I actually for a while I was sort of stopped with that. So I think it would be good to have somebody that knows how the code works and can do that sort of, you know, simple fixes if something breaks. I mean, it's a real Achilles heel that Pavel left this as sort of, you know, his pet project, and now we don't have anybody that really knows how that looks and what it does.
So maybe another thing would be just to kind of capture and document that particular module somehow.
Yeah.
Maybe within the modeling subcommittee, or so we can, you know, not necessarily burden ANAI with how it works every time we need to do something. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Good. So I feel like we've made some progress. You know, maybe Bill can take this to the ANAI team, or maybe Jacqueline may need to attend an ANAI call, which happens, I think, right before this call. So, all right. So let's move on. Let's see. So, this we can delete. All right, the O of Sun PCI use case, I think, I'm not sure they have modeling impact. Let me see. Well, I think they said they did have modeling impact, but I don't know what. Oh, no, they don't. Actually, maybe there's no modeling impact for this. Just left over from my table. Yeah. Let me go to the modeling page too and just cross verify. Okay, I don't think they're in here as something that they needed to. Okay. So for the NN network slices, I think Chi Yi has runs a separate call, and so I feel that's probably in pretty good shape. I did ask her to fill out the info modeling template. I don't think anybody from that use case is on the call. Let me see what they wrote. So they said that ran NSST to transport network NSST slicing profile. So I'll put the, let me see if they have a thing here.
But again, isn't this particularly all about modeling? And I think this is kind of being covered in the, probably the service IAM calls, right?
Yeah. So, again, unfortunately, I don't have somebody from the NN network slicing team here, or Deepak. Deepak, which use case are you focused on? Deepak? Oh, she's not joined yet on audio. So Chi does join the modeling calls regularly. And oh, actually Henry is also gonna be presenting next week for transport network slicing. potentially, or well, Deepak's not joined. Deepak, do you know what use case are you mostly involved with? Can you hear me, Deepak? Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, guys. So just this is my second meeting, so I haven't decided it.
Okay. So I'm just okay. All right. So we're just talking about NN network slicing. So I wasn't sure if you were involved with that. And Zhu is joined too. Thanks for joining, Zhu. Okay, so I think, I mean, we could walk through this, but it feels like Chi Yi has also a pretty good handle on some of this work. So are there any kind of questions that we could queue up for Chi Yi if for the modeling side? I think we should just mention on the Monday call that I think some of this still needs to be filled out. Okay, if not, let's move on. Okay, next is the A1 adapter policy extensions. And Andy had mentioned that we're exchanging policies across the API, investigate to see if it's necessary to represent the policies. I have asked John Keeney. So probably
instead of represent, maybe model.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have asked John Keeney to present on this call on the A1 adapter policy. So you see, basically, what I often do is, looking for the R7 page. Let me see here. So what I've done is often schedule, you know, things for use cases as well as discussions with PTLs and stuff. So we don't have one yet for the A1 adapter policy. So I think that would be good to have a meeting. And I think John was open to that. I just need to try to find a time that's good for him. And then maybe we can pull some of the other people there onto the call. Okay, so I just tried to reach out to Marge, but she's on the ORAN-OAM architecture call, so she's not able to join us, but she did fill out this page here, and we can, we might be able to in real time just respond or ask her questions, okay. So the main thing, as I understand, for this use case is that actually I have an overview picture that might be useful. Let me see. Okay, so basically what this is introducing is the standard defined VES event. And the VES event I know is modeled within ONAP. Let me see. So it's modeled within ONAP and it's also being standards driven. So basically this use case is introducing the standard defined VES event. And the VES model, I think, is the main thing that would probably be affected by this. there's an open modeling ticket, 370, and this VES information model, what they're doing is adding a new enum for the domain and a new field for the namespace that's only populated if the domain is standard defined. It's being driven by the 3GPP TS 28.532 standards. So there's a existing attribute called domain and a new enum value standard define that would need to be added. And then the standard define namespace which is a new attribute of type string or possibly an enum. And so basically the PNF would emit, or the XNF would emit the standard defined VES event, and it would be received by DCA's VES event listener. And then when the DCA event listener receives this event, it publishes that event onto the Kafka top, you know, DMAP topic bus with the topic name of namespace. And there's several values that are legal for namespace, like 3GPP configuration, for example, which says that I'm sending in a configuration message. So basically let's see what she wrote here. The namespace may be updated if additional standard bodies join in on the definition and emission of events of support. Oh, so basically, like, I think the idea is that the solution is general enough that it could be used or extended to other standards as well. So it's try to keep it to be a pretty generic solution. So for example, IETF, broadband form exam, et cetera, it allows ONAP to process general events from various standards bodies. And when they update, a new category of action could be added. So who owns this information? So there is, again, a valid model already there is already a VES event listener model, I believe. The affected APIs and swaggers, the DCA API for DMAP. So I do know that they've Margin and Damien have gone to the DCAE team, and they've presented and have been working closely with Vijay Kumar on this. So the DCA SDK API has to be modified, and CBD And it is in the modeling high level requirements, and there is a ticket for it. So if we look here, this is the work here. And Vimal was sort of co-leading this use case, although he's left now. So mostly Marge is leading this now. Does this look okay? Are there any questions about this that I could pose to Marge? Anybody, does it look okay to people?
Yeah, I just think we just need to update the information model.
Yeah. Okay, so that one's
Sorry, Ben.
Go ahead.
Yeah, do you know what's the progress with this project? Is that only modeling? Do they have implementation?
So they reduce
the scope.
Yeah.
For M2M3, that means they are not going to implement everything, or?
Let me see.
You have the impact table, right? Is it?
Yeah.
Did the scope reduction impact that at all, or have you looked at any scope reductions?
So I did meet with the development team yesterday, and they didn't indicate that they were.
Yeah, they have a yellow YAM too. You see.
Yeah, but they told me that things are in progress, and that part of it is, you know, the Europe has a lot of summer holiday. Lots of people take summer holiday lengths, but that's the main reason why it's yellow. They didn't talk about de-scoping anything though. That's a good question too. I can track and find out if I'll ask more focused if there's, is there anything being de-scoped? Yeah, that's a good question.
It's okay. Primarily DCAE, correct?
Yes, yeah, it is mostly DCAE impact. That's correct, yeah. Okay, I'll find out. I was on the Nokia development team call yesterday, and there wasn't any discussion of de-scoping this. So it could be just. I do know that there are several things that are marked yellow, including some of the ones I'm working, for example. And part of that is it's not like we're going to de-scope plug and play. It's more that there's things are. It's a very tight schedule. I think the M1 was delayed by 3 weeks, and M2M3 was not delayed at all, which makes the M2M3 a very short window. And if we look at the, I won't go to the schedule, but the schedule you see, it was just a very short, tight window. So I think that's add into that. I think they were saying that. A number of people are on vacation and stuff, which makes it tough. But it's a good question, so I'll find out. Okay, let's see. So for the configuration persistency service, Jacqueline, myself, Zhu, and Andy have been on calls. That meets every Friday. Let me open this up. Too many windows open. I'll start closing some here. Okay. So for the modeling stuff, I think here I was speaking with Jacqueline that maybe we should fill this out, but it wasn't entirely clear to me what the modeling impacts were, so I didn't want to fill this out myself. And Jacqueline had just presented on Monday about. Jacqueline had presented on Monday about the modeling stuff for CMPS, and mostly in R7, it's going to be a POC. So there, maybe Jacqueline, do you want to say some, or do you maybe have some ideas? I know you presented about adding the the application model off of the root. Is that the sort of intention here? Do we want to try to do that in R7?
I think that's the first step. At least we have to decide how we want to visualize models that are getting injected into ONAP through the onboarding and that aren't necessarily something that ONAP needs to know about ahead of time. I mean, that's the whole principle of the model-driven approach. So I think with this, we're trying to define what's the minimum set that ONAP needs to know about this kind of model in order to handle that model and to catalog it.
I
can just say, I mean, the proposal that I did was very sketchy, and I've gotten a lot of questions and good questions. So I mean, I think I'm not at the point yet where I have something that's ready for a really formal review, but one of the questions will be how quickly we think we can converge on some idea of what this really should consist of.
Yeah,
and
so,
I don't know. I guess we're going to drive that partially through Resource IM and partially through your meetings on CPS.
Yeah. So I can give a little bit more information about the CMPS for some of you who may not be too familiar. You know, like DPEC is pretty new to all of ONAP and stuff. So let me just pull up. So we are going to be presenting on August 17th, the release 8. Tony and myself, Tony Finnerty and myself are going to be presenting the release 8 CMPS. And basically the idea of CMPS is that it's introducing a data layer service specifically for network element data. So microservices that have network element data have a place to store it in a common place such that other microservices and use cases can access that data. And often, there are cases, let's say, that data is common, which also, of course, begs the question, where do we get the schema for that and what kind of information and how do you know what types of information to store for a particular XNF, right? the CMPS database is also meant to apply across not just RAN but core and transport, and of course there'll be northbound open APIs and GUIs to access that data. There are a number of use cases in R7 that are already needing to store data. This POC, which is being done in R7 to as a proof of concept for the CMPS work, the OSAM PCI use case and the network slicing, they want adapter extensions, and the Bell Canada State Management POC. So this is a view of the R7 POC and what they're trying to do, what the team is trying to do, and what they hope to accomplish. So basically, being able to ingest the standard defined VES event and use that to update the database, taking a model from SDC, and incorporating that potentially into the database and synchronizing with ANAI, and providing a basic API that other microservices can use. So there's sort of a roadmap I'll show you. So this is roughly what we are trying to do, what the team's trying to do going into R8. So they're trying to make the CMPS 2.0, which is a standalone project, and they hope to eventually deprecate the 1.0 and 1.1. So this whole project grew out of CCSDK. It's in CCSDK right now in SDNC, and it grew out from ATT's ConfigDB project, which mostly the Sun OFPCI team has been developing. And this model-driven POC will introduce some very basic things like writing data in, reading data, access control. And then we've made already, have worked on this for months to the project proposals and stuff, and presented at the TSC several times. And in R8, so we're hoping to take the what we learned from the POC and repropose this as a standalone project in R8. So what Jacqueline, and I don't think it took any slides from Jacqueline's presentation, but what Jacqueline is doing is somewhat related to also what I'm doing with the 5G service modeling. And eventually those two things may actually fully converge. But you know, Jacqueline has proposed essentially to hang an application model off of the design entity. Yeah. So I don't know if you have a link to your slide, or you can show your slides if you wish. Jacqueline, do you have a link to your slides? Maybe I can just put it in here too. Jacqueline, can you hear me?
Give me a minute.
Oh, there you go. So Jacqueline had a she had a presentation which she gave which had some good slides about the modeling work. And the main thing was, I think, you know, in my mind, it kind of hung a application model off of the design entity as the one of the main new things happening. Maybe Jacqueline might be having some problems with her audio. Okay, there she goes. Oops, okay. All right, let me see.
Hey, do you hear me now?
Oh yeah, now I can hear you, yes. Yeah.
Okay, I put I put in the chat both the the presentation and the initial proposal webpage.
Okay. Right. Okay. And maybe we can you and I can kind of clean up this text a little bit as we move forward. I don't know how, you know, we also have to decide how much of the modeling work you want done in R7 versus in R8, where we're actually a standalone project. Maybe this isn't super crucial to do in R7, but you know, it can take time to go through all the modeling process and modeling work. So so in R7, I think you have some runway time to get an early advance on this work, and then it'll be easier in R8. okay, let me see. Yeah, exactly. So this is the idea was to hang and create an application model, and there was a lot of debate and discussion about this concept. Okay, so I think this is at least probably needs more discussion from the modeling team, but Jacqueline and I both attend the modeling calls regularly, so this probably isn't a surprise to the modeling team. Let me see. The 5G service modeling, of course, I hold monthly meetings on that, and the ANI reverse engineering we just talked about. Is there any other thing that, I don't know if Zoo or Jacqueline, maybe if it would be possible to get John Keeney on the call for a couple minutes, that would be the last 15 minutes.
I can try to ping her.
That might be nice. Oh, and also Timo. Oh, shoot. Timo was on the call. Darn. So maybe we need to check. But actually, I'm on a call with Timo right after this. So maybe I think Michaela has said there's no impact for licensing management.
Sorry, Ben. John is offline.
No problem. That's fine. I'll touch base with Michaela. So it wasn't clear to me. I think Michaela said there's no modeling impact, and I think we still just need to double check. Again, I had met with Timo yesterday in the European afternoon, my morning. And I did talk to him about licensing management. Timo's just returned from vacation, so he needs to touch base with Simuli, and we'll find out more. But I don't think there's, at the moment, I think they're leaning towards there's no modeling impact for licensing management. And I don't think I've asked a couple of times and they specifically have not put anything in modeling. So there's probably no modeling licensing management impact, guessing. Okay. And so that leaves us with the 5G service modeling, and I've given a couple presentations already, and I have the presentation open here. So I think there's the main idea here, of course, and let me see if I can, some people have listened to the presentation and some people haven't. So let me see if I can give an abbreviated quick overview here. So the idea is basically we want ONAP to be able to support it. ONAP supports many domains, right? But one of the domains it supports is 5G, and 5G is based on these three big ideas of EMBB, enhanced mobile broadband, 100 times the capacity of 4G, going from 100 megabits per second to 20 gigabits in the uplink and 10 gigabits in the downlink, and MMTC, massive machine type communications, with the Internet of Things, a million devices per square kilometer, which works out to one device per about square foot. URLLC, sub-millisecond latency, you know, feeding and facilitating Industry 4.0. So ONAP is going to manage this 5G network, and we want to be able to make sure that we have the modeling work in place and to be able to turn up a real live 5G system. And so I just wanted to, I created this use case basically to make sure that we think about and have those things in place. So it's opened up a lot of good discussion. And if everything in ONAP can support and turn up, and we don't need to do anything to turn up a live 5G base station, that's great. We don't need to do anything, and that's fine. But it has opened up discussions, for example, about the cell and how do we represent the cell, and how do we store information related to the cell, and does ONAP need to know about the cell? And the answer to this is it's going to be stored in the CMPS database. There's also, I've attended a number of SDC calls in design time talking about what we want to do to create a 5G service. It turns out there's several ways we could potentially create a 5G service. And there has been discussion about that as well. so there's a whole nother 100 slide set on that. But to make a long story short, basically this is the key thing here. However you make a service is going to have some things associated with it, notably resources, right? And then in the 3GPP standards, 620, 622, 541, and 540, the 3GPP standards itself suggests a model of how to model elements in a network. So I won't go over all those models, but there are, and then ONAP itself also has a view of things, right? VNFs and PNFs and stuff and so forth. And so, you know, how do we super collide all these things together and make it still, have it make sense? So Jacqueline's, Jacqueline's proposal here to essentially hang off a application model may be one way to go, right? And basically, to have an application model that you can stuff all of this other domain specific model stuff into, and maybe vendor specific stuff as well, And maybe it's not its own separate thing. This is still essentially got to be worked. But basically, I had through many various discussions on many different calls, had also entertained the idea of maybe we want to augment the platform information model, because there's lots of similarities if we look at some of these concepts, like the manage entity and so forth, with some of the 3GPP models. We see similar ideas of manage element and the functions which are represent the PNFs and VNFs and things. And so if we just blindly suck in a information model, you might need some sort of complex mapping to figure out what thing is what, or other, you know, it raises other questions, let's say. So we've also discussed basically, you know, a simple example of, let's take some class XYZ and some attributes A, B, C, and D, E, F that are mentioned in 540. And if we pull this in, if we define these in a Yang artifact or in some modeling artifact, and this is onboarded during design time, and then this application model is used, then, and other which may include other domain and vendor specific information, then this would get exported with the service CSAR package that Cloud Services archive that SDC exports when it creates the service. Every service basically is every service has associated with it some resources basically. And so when you define the service, it tells you what resources are associated with that, and within those resources you have access to the artifacts related to that service, which allows you to find out what the appropriate attributes and stuff are. So this is at a very high level, one possible way forward, and a lot of details probably still need to be worked out, right? So we had talked to Yuri because, the CDS is also one way you can manually onboard stuff. And I tried to go to Monday's SDC call, and I guess I got the time wrong. They do meet on Mondays, and my calendar entry might have gotten, I might have an hour off because of the whole daylight savings time problem. But Yuri had some thoughts as well. He was discussing about the 5G NRM, and Zhu had also talked about, you know, an SDC can kind of automatically load these things, these Yang artifacts. So there's a lot of, and Oscar had chimed in also saying, I mean, you know, there's already an infrastructure to have whatever Yang artifacts you want during onboarding, and you can point to the appropriate artifacts when you onboard. So maybe nothing new needs to be introduced. I host a meeting the third Thursday of every month. And I can add you guys on the call here to that meeting if you're interested in just even listening in and discovering more. So this is kind of a rough flow of one possible way forward, and that is basically we introduce this NRM, and maybe we don't need to call it 5G NRM, basically this NRM, which is an object, Yang or Ansible, that you onboard during design time, and it's not clear if this is needed yet, but some sort of pointer maybe to that artifact so that you can extract it later on after in runtime. So again, I think this is, I've made a number of presentations on this on the modeling call, and you see, hey, Jacqueline, there, some of the things we're doing are pretty much similar. Maybe you're CMPS focused, and maybe I'm 5G RAN focused, but we're sort of converging on similar answers, which isn't bad, right? So, And maybe eventually we retitle this use case to just model-driven ONAP or something more generic. But I think maybe this still needs some more discussion. There's been a lot of discussion about how to move forward with this. And I hosted a call last week with Yuri, and we had a lot of good discussion on this topic as well. So I just want to make sure. It seems like if we do this, however we do this, for example, if we introduce this application model and stuff, it looks like we need to make sure that some of these long lead things happen. Otherwise, ONAP won't be ready when we need it to be ready, right? So.
Ben, just one additional comment on this discussion with Yuri.
Yes.
I think the way that CDS to manually upload this young model, that is more like input information in the CBA. That one doesn't need any modeling change. It's transparent for the modeling. So I don't think that's the way we want to go.
Okay.
Because for the CPS case, you don't have CDS. You just have a macro service to retrieve the modeling information and create the dynamic database schema. You don't need to run any CBA blueprint.
Okay.
So that's...
Yeah, that's something to keep in mind.
My understanding is that the CBA one is not in this scope.
Okay, it's not needed, yeah. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to, you know, somebody else had suggested we should talk to Yuri. And so I had scheduled a meeting with Yuri. And as you mentioned, you know, I think maybe you have everything we need in SDC, and the CDS just allows you another way to get out, you know, to do the same thing but manually, as I understand it, right? So, okay. So let me show you the template really quick that I created. Let me see here. So it wasn't entirely clear to me if yet we need to introduce a new information element or what we need to do. That's still somewhat under discussion, I think. But there are a number of use cases that are looking to introduce parameters from the 5G NRM, notably the end-to-end network slicing, the OSON PCI use case. And they're going to do it kind of no matter what, right? Because their use cases need to proceed forward. So if we don't come up with a solution, they're going to come up with some kind of solution just to make their use case work or their demos work. I know that CMPS, the demo, is maybe on a slightly different time scale, but there are other use cases that need this. Now, OFSON PCI use case already has sort of a solution. They, again, because they started way back in R3 or in R4, they were demoing stuff. So they just, that's how they came up with this ConfigDB thing. And so maybe, you know, they're looking now to evolve that. And then next, our slicing team meets every Wednesday. OFSON PCI meets every Friday. And I've mentioned it and have described the my service RAN use case to them. And they, you know, they said, oh, you know, we really need this solution essentially to what's going on there, because it's very clear as I showed them about the 5G NRM and what I'm trying to do modeling wise that, you know, they're very interested in a common solution. So there's a number of relevant standards here, and the spreadsheet and slides and stuff that I showed you. So we can discuss this more on the modeling call as well. But I've answered, you know, the questions of who's using it and who owns this stuff. And mostly in R7, it's going to be these two use cases that are very heavily using this immediately. So of the hundreds of parameters in the 5G NRM, there's maybe a dozen that these two use cases care about. And maybe we need to come up with a solution for them sooner rather than later. Okay, any questions on this? We're about out of time here, so. Okay, and again, we can continue these on the actual modeling calls as well. So, and if you're interested, you can attend the Thursday calls. Yeah. All right, any final thoughts? I think we're over time, actually. So any final thoughts from anybody on anything? Okay, if not, I'll let you get on to your next meeting. Thank you, everybody, for attending. I hope you found this useful. Have a great day. Thanks.